This is Lucas from City of Brass, and you're listening to Redemption, part of the RPG Academy Network.
This is Redemption, an actual play podcast set in the Star Wars role-playing game system.
I'm Michael. Typically, I play Tazi on the show, but this week we're going to be giving you a bonus episode before we dive headlong into Season 3 in the next couple weeks. With this bonus episode, our GM Chris will be sitting down with a couple of our Patreon backers, Jacob and Richard, to answer some of the questions they might have about the show, its past, its present, and possibly even its future. So sit back, relax, and enjoy, and the crew of the Crown's Fang will return soon for Season 3. Thanks, everyone, and may the Force be with you.
Well, welcome to our little bonus episode here. A little different today. I have asked two of our Patreon backers to jump online here and just talk about the show a little bit. So today we've got Richard and Jacob on. I'll let you guys introduce yourselves.
Alrighty. Hi, I'm Richard Kreutz Landry. Big fan. Love your work. And super excited to get to talk about this.
I am Jacob Cohen, also fan of the podcast. I play with Kendall in the local gaming group we have here in Grand Rapids. I also did the voice of Feet the Deveronian Bounty Hunter on whatever episode that was. That was a lot of fun.
That's where I know your voice.
Yes.
From. Okay. I was like, I know that voice. I feel like I've heard it recently.
Yep. Season one. Don't remember the episode number right off the top of my head because I think it was multiple episodes.
Well, I was only in one.
Well, that's right. You were in one, and then the story ended up evolving from there.
Right.
So, well, tonight, the idea is just kind of informal. Let's just talk about the show. Kind of like to get a little behind the scenes, get some of your guys' feelings, thoughts, questions, that kind of stuff. See what you guys are thinking when it comes to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I have some questions in no particular order, so I don't know, Richard, if you have one you want to start with, or I can jump in, whatever.
Yeah, sure. I've got them again. They're sort of in a random order. First one, I guess, kind of makes sense. So I know there have been some featured sort of guest voices outside of the main cast. How does that process work? How do you sort of cut them in or all that? I know there's been Axel from, was that Sharkbones Kid? And then, of course, the crew of the Harlequin, right?
Well, the Harlequin actually came up. I did a convention here in Kalamazoo, a convention called Marmalade Dog. And when I was there, I ran a game and tied the storyline in with our storyline. And it went really well. So I said, you know what? I don't know how to retell this storyline in the podcast without just having the characters come on. So I reached out to as many of the guys that I could get from the actual convention and asked them to come on. And at the time, it was only two people. I wanted to add a third. So Jacob's been a friend of ours for a while, so I asked him just to come on, and that's how we recorded that one. Axel, obviously, he's with the Sharkbone, which is part of the RPG Academy, and so are we. A lot of times we just reach out to either other podcasters, people within the network, or friends, and just say, hey, this is the part we need filled. Can you jump on and record this stuff? Master Dane, that is one of the friends that Kendall has had for a while. Him and Chris have been friends for quite a while, and they recorded that stuff on their own and actually plugged it into the show, and none of the rest of us had ever heard it until it actually aired.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of neat for us because we did the scenes and then went, okay, insert this here, and then we actually got to hear the final product. So that was kind of neat. We have talked about doing more, having more guests on, so to speak. Hard part with that is getting the scheduling right and making sure that it all meshes well. So no fancy process. We don't have like an audition or anything like that. Maybe when we get 1 million downloads, we'll start auditioning people. Or when Disney makes us their official podcast.
Yes. And it's on the horizon, I'm sure.
Yeah. No pressure, Disney. Give me a call. I'm available.
Well, I know. I like it. It's fun to hear your guys' voices distorted when you do other voices yourselves, but I also like it when you guys bring friends of the show on and stuff like that. It definitely makes it feel more alive, I guess.
It just adds a little new feeling and a new spin on the characters. You know, as a game master, the hardest part that I have is doing all these different characters. And luckily, the other three players I have are willing to voice characters and do different things for me. So I don't have to try to, in one scene, do four different characters because I've already got enough voices in my head. Trying to add three or four more would just get even worse. So
that was actually one of the things I was going to ask about, is having the players around the table sort of jump in for NPCs. Are you guys doing that mostly in post, or are you saying, you know, okay, Nate, time to do Jabu, or how does that work?
Jabu. Jabu is one of my favorite NPCs, is not one of Kendall's favorite NPCs.
It's not for everybody.
We do that right there on the spot. You know, in that situation, like we'll use Jabu as an example. I said, you know what? Master Thaw is busy. Why don't we have his Padawan answer the phone? Nate, give me a Padawan. And he jumped out with Jabu, and that's what was created.
Okay.
Other ones like Master Alshane, he was a little more, hey, Mike, I need this type of character. Can you do somebody in an Athorian? They speak slower. He's much more measured. And I gave him a little more information as to what was kind of behind the scenes, so he knew how to help direct those scenes. But for the most part, it's just us on the spot. The four of us are just really good at kind of improvising and just letting the scenes develop and going with them. It's really nice to have that mix. There's not a lot of pre-planning, and we don't add in a lot post. Other than when Kendall's done Master Dane, there was a speech that Rafe gave that I added in later, mostly because I left my notes at home and didn't want to hold up the game while I tried to rewrite it. So I just recorded it at home and sent it to Kendall, and then he added that in. Otherwise, it's all done on the spot.
I think it was funny one time, didn't Mike have a conversation as Master Alshane and as Tazi? Was he talking to himself there for a little bit?
He did, and for me, that was a small pleasure to watch him kind of go back and forth. And at one point, he actually stopped and went, ah, this is harder than it looks. And I was like, ha-ha, welcome to my world. I have to do that on a regular basis. Yeah, they do a great job of helping me out with those characters and those voices. Part of the reason we do it is if we've got a scene where I've only got two of the players in the scene, I've got one player sitting there doing nothing. And as a game master, I don't want somebody sitting at the table doing nothing. So if I can say, hey, there's two NPCs in this scene, or you play this NPC while A1 gets thrown in, that gives that player something to do. It gets them engaged, and it makes it more fun for all of us. That's kind of why I started doing it. Once we found it worked, we just kept going with it.
So speaking of A1, I know there's at least one point where he had like forgotten something or had chosen not to say something, and it's sort of like it comes up and it's like, oh, this is going to be something that's going to move the plot forward. Oh yeah, it was like the message that he didn't want to play when Ayla was around while they were on Rhodia. Is it easier to sort of introduce those plot threads when you have a character like A1 who is sort of almost a known miscreant when it comes to having those little things where you can just sort of drop him in? You know, he has a personality where isn't necessarily going to immediately tell the crew something that it feels like, oh, well, a reasonable person would have told them about this right away or that sort of thing?
Yes and no.
Okay.
There are times when I do use A1 to introduce new things. And then there are times when A1 kind of prevents things from coming up just because I have to keep him in character. A1's an interesting concept because he was originally designed to be an NPC that sabotaged the ship, kind of ratted them out. Like, the players were supposed to space him. He was supposed to be out the airlock. Like, that was a pain in our butt. But in game, there was a conversation with KO and A1 where basically A1 said, well, I'm a slave. And KO said, well,
not
let's
anymore.
Fix that. Yeah. So then he made him part of the crew. And I was like, okay, here's a droid that's been wiped quite a bit, so he doesn't have a memory. And I went online and read more about droids. And one of the big things with a droid in Star Wars is the longer they go between memory wipes, the more personality they develop. So I've tried to play him where he was basically about equivalent to an 8-9-year-old kid, but he has all the skills of, you know, an adult. So I tried to play him as kind of an 8-9-year-old kid that takes things real literal. And as we've gone, we've only been a couple months in story, so he hasn't really aged, but he's starting to grow. He's starting to learn things. I kind of play it where sometimes he'll tell things because he thinks it'll be funny, and other times he won't because he thinks he's doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing with A1 is he latches onto ideas.
Right.
He heard KO one time call Corel beautiful, and he latched on to that.
I remember that, yeah.
Which is great.
one sentence the player said, and I was like, oh, I got it. I wrote it down and tried for a while to get those two together. That didn't work out. Then he latched on to Tazi's comment of, we're a crew, and we'll do whatever it takes to be a crew. So he's latched onto that. Not sure what he's going to latch onto next. A lot of times with him, I just wait for the players to say something that sparks me, and then I just write it down, and I'll latch onto that and go.
So I actually do have something that made me think of. So when are we going to see print your own medals designed as, you know, just like the A1 thing, so we can all have our own medals for all of these wonderful things that we've achieved as well?
I'll talk with Kendall because he does computer-y things. I'm not good with computers. I'll see what he can do. That might be entertaining.
Release that to the Patreon backers.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I have had a couple kind of more mechanical questions.
Okay.
Just because you guys don't really bring up the mechanics a lot. You don't really talk about specific skill roles or what you're doing and any of that stuff. So I just out of curiosity was kind of wondering what power level you guys think the characters are at right now.
It's funny, we just went through that today. Basically, today's recording was the beginning of what we're going to call season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we leveled everybody up. Right now, everybody is equivalent to 500 experience points over starting experience. So they're pretty beefy.
Yeah.
Maybe 7th, 8th level character.
So definitely in the mid-range area.
Yeah. I once heard somebody say that a Jedi Master is probably over 1,000 XP. I know somebody statted out Kit Fistu, and I think they said he was right around 2,000 XP. Don't quote me on those numbers exactly, but I think that's roughly where he said. So that gives you a little idea on the power level. We started at 150 or 200 over starting XP, and then we record for a full day. So we record for about 8 hours. So every time we record, we get between 20 and 30 experience to put in, which if you want to read the rules and be real rule specific, Fantasy Flight Games says every game session should be roughly 5 experience points, and they say every game session should be roughly 2 hours. So since we record for 8, yeah, we usually do 20 to 30. I'm the person who's always disliked experience points and leveling up in games, D&D especially. I mean, I started on first edition because I'm old, and I've always hated the idea that in D&D, the only way you can level up is to kill things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's never any role-playing experience or anything else. So what was my motivation to ever role-play? I've always hated that. I've always actually never used that. I've always used milestones and said, hey, you've done enough to level up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Fantasy Flight Games doesn't use levels. So we just kind of used a time frame. We leave it pretty free and loose. And one of the big things we do, though, is when we level up or advance our characters, we only take things that we've actually done. So like when I leveled or advanced A1, I advanced his slicing and a little bit with mechanics, not a lot, but threw in some gambler.
Yeah.
Because he's been gambling. Now, how many people, if you're a min-maxer, would give an astromech droid gambling?
Right.
It doesn't necessarily fit with min-maxing, but in story, that's what he's done. He hasn't done a lot of mechanical stuff. As far as skills, I gave him ranks in ranged light because he's been using his gun. He tried a little bit of melee. Didn't do so good, but he tried. But most of his skills went back into slicing and perception and things he's done. Same thing with the other players when they advanced their characters today when we were looking at it. That was their focus. What have I done? What have I advanced? How has my character grown? If you want to look at it from a min-maxer standpoint, our characters are not min-maxed. They're really driven on what has their character done and where is it going. It's a little different.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of along the same track there. Do you guys house rule anything from the original rule set?
Yes.
Or I guess how close do you play it to the rules?
Rule number one, whenever I game master, the story always takes precedent over the rules. So if there's a rule I don't like, I don't use it. I feel like we're really close to the rules. One of the big house rules that we do use, and it has come up a few times, you're in combat, you need to make an astrogation check to jump to hyperspace. There's no rules for it. So today we used A1 had made 3 successful astrogation checks, he was able to jump into hyperspace. Now, if that took 6 rounds, then that was 6 rounds of combat. If it was 3 rounds, it was 3 rounds. So that's just kind of how I looked at it, is you're trying to do all these advanced math and programming while the ship's being tossed around. You're getting shot at. Tazi's yelling orders. KO's yelling, shoot this. I can't think of any other house rules we use.
What about the triumphs of successes? Is that a house rule, or is that in the actual?
I believe the rules is written. Players are supposed to determine their own advantages and triumphs, and the game master is supposed to determine threats and despairs. So we do house rule that and just say, if you have something cool, throw it on the table, so to speak, and we'll all decide on how it's actually going to play out. I've always played games with, this is our story we're telling, not my story. So if you've got something you want to add, add it. I've got players that flip dark side points over to make their own lives more difficult. I think that's entertaining to me.
Yeah.
but it fits the story, it fits the character, and it fits with what the scene is. So I'm pretty easy going with the rules. We do try to follow them as close as we can. We had one today, a collision. We'd never used it, so we had to figure out how does collision damage work?
Hmm.
When two vehicles run into each other, what happens? Found out both vehicles automatically get a critical hit.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of figure that out. And one of my goals for the next season is to explore the rules a little more and to get into some of the other avenues. I'd like to get more into the ship combat. Part of the thing with ship combat, and I've said this to my players, is I have a hard time visualizing three dimensions.
Yeah.
So you've got ships coming in from literally any angle. I have a hard time describing that. So I'm trying to learn as a game master and as a player, how do I describe a ship coming in? You know, it's coming in from the bottom, but your right side at this angle. And we're hoping we can get a little better at that kind of stuff. I shouldn't say hope. I know we will. It'll just take a little time. We are starting to dive in the books and looking up some other stuff.
I don't know if it would help, but you can get little paper mock-ups or something and a little thing around it. You know, it would have, you know, maybe not the numbers of a clock or something, but, you know, like different adjectives around it. And you could be like, oh, you know, it's coming in like this. And you sit there and play with it and go, oh, yeah, it's coming in from this. And you don't have something ready made for that.
Those spheres that like you could, the toy that you like can explode and it comes, oh. And, you know, it gets bigger and smaller.
Yeah, my idea was to use some sort of miniatures and try to describe it so I can visualize it. Real similar to what you were just talking about. Otherwise, I can't think of any other house rules right off the top of my head that we use. I know we are going to start using morality for Corel.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually surprised you guys haven't already, because it seems like she's gone through a couple back and forths there with her crystal and all that.
Part of my thought with that is I wanted the players to focus on the story and not so much the rules. Now that we're learning the rules a little better, I want to use morality, especially since I understand morality better and how it's used. Behind the scenes, I had only played this game 3 times before I started running it for the show, so I wasn't really familiar with the rules, so I didn't want to add a bunch of rules to myself either. Now that I've been doing it for a while, I feel a lot more comfortable with them. We can start throwing in, you know, morality and different things like that to drive the story. That is going to make things interesting for Corel, because right in the books, if you lie or let anger in, that can cause morality issues. And the way it works is you get conflict points. And at the end of the session, you roll a d10, subtract the number of conflict points you've earned, and that's the direction your morality goes up or down. So if she's got 12 conflict points, it's going down. If she only got 2 and she rolls an 8, well, it's going up by 6.
Okay, so it's sort of like a session level Paragon Renegade thing-ish. Okay.
Yeah, and we're going to start using that. The main thing we have to look at is, since we record for 8 hours, if after 8 hours I had her add up all that conflict, she could be like, well, I got 30 conflict in a D10 to roll. This isn't fair. So we're looking at maybe every 2 hours of rolling that D10, which is, you know, like I said, equivalent to roughly when a session ends. That'll be something new we're kind of introducing. That'll be interesting, because I don't want to say it doesn't handcuff a player, but it really forces a player in one direction.
Uh-huh.
You're either going light or dark with this. There's not a lot of going back and forth. If you get angry, there's a point. You lie, there's a point. Right now, we don't have to worry about that because we're just rolling with it.
I do really feel like Fantasy Flight Games has, you know, their rules. When you understand them, they do really serve the story.
Yeah, they call it a narrative dice system,
yeah,
which I really like. It, just like any system, it's got its little flaws. I think the dice, sometimes it's a little harder to succeed and a little easier to fail, just based on if you roll all blanks on the dice, that's still a failure.
Right.
So it is a little harder to succeed in some avenues, but I think that's where they want you to build up the dice pool. And that's something else we're working on learning how to do, is how to get more blue dice and things like that in their boost dice. At the same time, I get to learn how to put setback dice in there to make things more difficult.
So speaking of the dice, do you guys have to cut out a lot of time where you're counting up the successes or whatever? Or have you gotten so good at it that it's just sort of second nature now?
We definitely have gotten a lot quicker at it. A lot of times you can kind of glance real quick and go, yep, there's a lot of successes or a lot of, you know, threats or whatever, and do that rather quickly. But Kendall does a great job with the editing, so he does get rid of a lot of ooms and ahs and pauses. And I rolled the dice, and now I have to add these up and go, okay, I've got 3 successes with 2 advantages. So we do cut some of that out. Luckily, we've gotten better at it.
So one thing you mentioned, you're doing these basically marathon recording sessions. So do you guys do anything to kind of warm up before you get started for the day? Or, you know, I know like a lot of improv guys do their little, you know, count to 10 together or what have you, all those little warm up things. Do you guys do anything like that?
Kind of. Our warm-up is we sit down and go, okay, how was your day? How was your week? How's things going? All right, we've got this, this, and this we want to accomplish today. Let's get into it. Our warm-up is a lot of where did we leave off? How do we want to get it kick-started? And then we jump into it. We have toyed around with the idea of doing some of the improv warm-ups. Right now, I don't feel like we need to, just because we talk ourselves into it, so to speak, and then jump right into it. I prefer it when I jump onto another show because it gets me a little more focused. And the one time I didn't do it, I wasn't happy with my performance. I'd love to go back on that show and so to speak, redeem myself, because I would say it was a good half an hour before I was really into what I needed to do. And I felt bad because I was like, I really underperformed here.
Well, I mean, do you think part of it is just when you're working with a new group of people, or, I mean, even if you're in a game, you know, where some of the people who are recording are people you game with all the time, there's always that little bit of like, okay, there's maybe this person who I don't game with regularly, so how does that dynamic work? You don't want to step on anything, or do you think it could have been something like that?
Yeah, for sure. It was that, and it was a brand new game to me, and I was trying to figure out kind of the mechanics and the process for it, and it was a diceless system. It was a lot of pulling things out of bags, and different colored things meant different things. And I was trying to wrap my head around that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we had done a little warm up and kind of played around with the mechanics ahead of time, I would have been fine. I would have jumped into it.
So kind of pulling back a little bit to look at the bigger picture, I was always curious, how much do you plan out story arcs? Do you get down, you know, get with Kendall and Nate and Mike and everybody and say, where do you want your character to be, you know, 8 sessions from now? How do you see your character evolving? Kind of what, or do you just kind of let it fly and say, okay, you guys have this confronted with you. Let's just see how it plays out.
There's a lot of conversation that goes on in between games. What I ask them is, what is your character's goal? Not necessarily where do you want your character to be, but what is your long-term goal? Okay, now give me something I can work with. Best example is we started the show off and it's called Redemption because all three characters have flaws in their past that they wanted to redeem themselves from. So I said to him, what's your flaw? What's your background? You know, Kao ran from the Yinkuri. Karel quit being a Jedi. Tazi's father was raging alcoholic who lost the ship.
Yeah.
So that allowed me to go, okay, I can start off with story arcs right there. And that's how we started off the first story arc, was with the Yinkuri, and Kao has kind of passed and tying in the other characters' backgrounds a little bit. And then jumping into the next story arc was a little more Tazi and his father, and then a little more with Karel mixed in there. So I do talk a lot with them. I do want a lot of input, but mostly they don't want to give me too much input, because the real appeal for them, especially Mike, he loves to be surprised with stuff. He doesn't want to know how is our session going to end, how is our session going to go. He wants to sit down and play and develop the story as we go. So I'll get different ideas, you know, like Hixa, for example. Jacob, you created the NPC. It was actually Nate who mentioned something about the Black Sun in his past. I combined those two ideas, and there you had Hixa's introduction.
Well, that going along...
Which was epic, by the way.
Yeah, that was really...
that was awesome.
Really happy with how you took that. Going along with that, did you kind of sit down and tell them beforehand, like, okay, I'm going to introduce this guy. Don't kill him, because I want to bring him back, or...
No,
you just kind of let it go.
That's where I did use the mechanics to my advantage. There is a mechanic in Fantasy Flight games where if I flip a destiny point from dark to light, that NPC doesn't die.
Oh.
That nemesis somehow survives. So in that scene, I actually flipped one over and said, he falls onto his ship. His ship catches him. Oh, he crash lands. I flip over another one. There's a speeder on board. He gets away. So there are mechanics for that I did use to my advantage there. I didn't tell them anything. Like, they had no idea. Like, the look on Mike and Kendall's face when Hixa jumps on the front of the ship and says, give me Kao Greel. They both looked over at Nate. And Nate's like, what? I don't know what he's talking about. And that scene just developed from there. You know, I had the original idea that he was going to jump on the ship, and I had no idea how the scene was going to play out. I had the stats in front of me, and I said, all right, let's see how it goes. I didn't necessarily expect 8-1 to decide to be the hero and fly out and try to fight him one-on-one, which, you know, there's a good example of not min-maxing. If you compare A1 in Hixa, yeah, you would never take A1 out there to fight him. But that's what he would do. He had latched on to, this is my crew, I'm going to protect him. At that time, A1 had a whopping 1 green in melee. So I got to roll one green die versus two purple dice plus Hyxa's range defense and melee defense. I mean, min-maxing it, not going to hit. Like, it's just not going to happen, which I'm pretty sure it didn't happen.
But man, it was a lot of fun to listen to.
Yeah. Made for a good story.
The funny part on that was watching Kendall roll all these. I'm going to just force push him off. No, I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
I'm going to try again. Nope. But there was kind of a good example of how we had to kind of house rule something. He was trying to force push Hyxa off. There's no rules for that.
Mm-hmm. Especially if he was like mag sucked onto the ship. And yeah.
Yeah. If I remember right, I just said, you're rolling against his athletics. Roll your discipline against mm-hmm. his athletics. We'll see how it goes. Because in my mind, she's using a force power against his physical attributes. So mm-hmm. that seemed the most logical way of doing it. No rules for it. We just went with it. And it worked.
So kind of along the same lines, and I know we kind of talked about this a little bit already, how far ahead do you plan? Do you have kind of plot points that you're going to hit from now until whenever, or are there times when you come in and you don't really know what you guys are doing?
Some days I have big plans, some days I don't. A lot of times I have a longer story arc that I'm thinking ahead on. I just don't know exactly how we're going to get there. When I plan games, I have bullet points, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Here are the key things I want to hit in the session, and we work on hitting those. Sometimes we hit them all, sometimes we don't. A good example of that is the Count Dooku encounter. For those that don't know, I had 4.5 pages of monologue he was supposed to go through.
Jeez.
We got through half a page and Tazi shoots him. And I'm like, what? Like, this was supposed to wrap up the Rafe and Tassar arc so we could move on, and you just shot him. So that changed all my plans for long term. So I had planned on wrapping that arc up, which I don't like leaving loose ends. We could have walked away from it there, but I'm like, I don't like doing that as a storyteller. I feel like, lack of a better term, I don't feel fulfilled until we've wrapped all that up. Rafe and Tassar had to come back later, mm-hmm. and that developed into a different story.
Yeah, that actually opened up a whole new story arc. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they were supposed to go on to other things. Basically, we were supposed to go on to Tazi's father. So now all of a sudden I couldn't go that direction. So now I had to just rework it and go a different direction, which for me is actually a lot of fun. I enjoy that, and I enjoy kind of the challenge of, oh, you've changed my story. Well, let's go with it, and let's see how can I either A, get back on track, or B, forget about the rails I had originally written, and let's go on a different train, so to speak, and see where we go. So there are days, I guess, to answer your question, there are days when I plan things out, you know, real in-depth, and then there are days like today where I sat down and said, we're starting season 3, where do we want to go? How do we want to go with things? We've wrapped up, Rafe and Tassar are gone. We've wrapped up Tazi's father. You know, he's back on Tula, chilling out with Crazy Hand. Oh, how did KO describe her? Crazy Hands Lady or whatever, Darla.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So all that's been wrapped up, and we sat down and talked and kind of formulated a plan, and we've, you know, launched into it today. I'm not somebody that can plan a lot of details. Part of the reason is if I try to read my own notes, because I've got a little dyslexia going on, I will switch letters and switch words, and it really frustrates me. And it slows the game down. So I'd rather just write some bullet points and sit down and go and describe things and just see how the game plays out. A lot of things have come up that I didn't plan that the players have just thrown at me. And I think that's great. You know, I have fun with that. Kind of tends to lead to a little more natural story than a forced story.
So kind of with that, so you were saying that, you know, sometimes the players just kind of throw things in there. I remember at one point you'd mentioned about, like, what is it, the bar on, is it Tula's the Ice Planet, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
They walk into the bar and how, you know, that just sort of evolved.
Yeah, that bar, and there was a diner, I think on Randon, that they went to that had all the pneumatic tubes and all that
stuff.
That's
right. Yeah.
Those were scenes where the player's like, we're going to the bar. And as a game master, I'm like, why? I don't understand what you're doing at the bar. I don't have a bar planned. So the first time I did it, I actually did it as a way to kind of, I don't want to say the term mess with my players, but I did it to see how they would react. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, what's the bar look like? And Mike's face lit up. He's like, really? We get to describe it? not literally what he said, but that was like what his face said. And I was like, yeah. So all of a sudden they describe Bob's Diner, whatever it was called, with all the pneumatic tubes and the cheap food and all the horrible sanitation issues that would be with all the tubes. And then we got on Tula and they're like, we're going to the bar. And I smiled at the table. I was like, cool. What's it look like? And that's kind of been my running joke with them is any bar you go to, guess who's describing it?
Okay.
They do a good job of describing the bars and setting them up. I think the bar on Tula is probably my favorite because I can really visualize this kind of ice palace with all these, you know, glowing crystals in the corner. And
I always picture that one James Bond movie where they're at, like when in Antarctica or whatever that is. Yeah. And they're in that ice place.
Yeah, that comes to my mind too. I can't remember the name of the movie. Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
I just got back from Disneyland, so my mind is going to, you know, Frozen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Did you go on It's a Small World?
Yes.
Did it get stuck?
Sadly, no. Although we waited for 2 hours for the Electric Light Parade, and it was right by there, and that was the only song that was playing for about 2 hours, so it's about as bad.
Yeah, no, couldn't do it. I'm not going to lie, couldn't do it.
So kind of leading into that, and I know there's no real answer for this. I mean, you guys obviously have a good group, get comfortable with each other, but for me being kind of a fledgling GM, I always like asking questions like this. Do you have any tips or any kind of tricks that you use when things go completely off the rails and you're like, I have nothing planned? I know you were already talking about how you just throw things out back to them, and that kind of harkens back to Dungeon World again. If you don't have something planned, just have the players make it up yourselves. But I didn't know if you had anything else that you're kind of like go to when things don't go the way you're expecting.
I always say, be honest. Like, again, I'll go back to Catacon. Richard, the game that we played in, the group made a contact up. Guy who's like this master manipulator. He's always playing both sides of the coin. He's never going to tell you all the information, but he's going to lead you to where you want to be, but not give you the information that's going to make him look bad. And it was this really intense character. And I, at one point, like halfway through the scene, I actually looked at the table and said, I need a minute. This is not how I think as a person. So give me a second to collect my thoughts on how would this character proceed? How would he answer your questions? Where is he going to send you? What direction is he going to go? And it was nice because everybody at the table was like, okay, cool. Being able to say that to your table, it's not a bad thing. I think some people are worried that, oh my God, I'll sound like I'm, you know, unknowledgeable or not a strong game master. I actually think doing that makes you stronger because it shows you actually care about getting it right.
Yeah, and 9 times out of 10, right, your players are there to have a good time. And unless you're working with people who are master, you know, improvisers or something, they're probably going through that same process in their head for their character. So I think it worked out well, and the ending for that game was amazing. Yeah. But that's sort of an inside joke at this point. But yeah. But one question I did have for you, just in general, like how much of what you guys record ends up on the cutting floor? So if you're doing an 8-hour session, how many episodes do you get out of that?
Kendall would know that question way better than I would. I'm going to say 3, maybe 4. And keep in mind, the 8 hours, we take breaks. We, you know, usually have lunch, dinner somewhere in there. So it's not like a true 8 hours straight.
Right.
I don't know anybody that could record for 8 hours straight. Generally, we record about an hour, hour and a half at a time. We'll take a break, come back to it. Usually break times is where we talk about, okay, this is what happened. Players kind of guess as to where they think things are going to go, or give me clues as to where they want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we just throw caramel at each other, like today. Or sometimes we wait until Kendall's got a mouthful of caramel and specifically wait to ask him a very important question. That's my guess. Don't quote me on that. Kendall would know much better than I would. There is a lot of editing he does for the ums and ahs and the pauses, so it makes it sound a lot smoother.
Right.
Because of my great ability with names, whenever I say a name wrong, you'll hear somebody say, you said it wrong, and then I go, ah, crap. So then I'll go back in and re-record what I had just said. That way I get the name right. I have no idea why names are my biggest bane when it comes to pronouncing things right, but they are. It's always been that way. Something I've always had to, you know, just struggle through.
So you said, you know, you get through about an hour and a half or so. Do you find that with experience you guys have gotten better at sort of breaking the content up into segments where, you know, it'll end up being about an hour? You just sort of have a sense now for, okay, we're starting a combat. That's probably going to take, you know, a certain amount of time, and then we have, you know, this much time left to just get through something and then move on? Or have you found that pacing has gotten easier with time? Or
I would say pacing is something we don't pay that close of attention to.
Okay.
Usually we'll pause when we think it's a good spot to pause. We don't really kind of plan that out. Today, we're trying to have a little bit more set cutoff time. And at one point, I looked down and was like, okay, we've got roughly 20 minutes till we need to wrap up. I want to finish up what we've got going on. Here's how it would go. And we jumped into it. Once again, contact with my idea to the players didn't go the way I thought it would. So it went a little longer. What I thought would be a quick scene ended up being a little longer. But we don't really pay that close to, okay, we have to get this done in this hour and a half. We just pause when we think there's a good pause, and Kendall's really good at just splicing it all together and making it sound good.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, there are a lot of podcasts out there that I really like that don't do this, but I mean, I guess to Kendall's credit, I mean, you guys sound really polished, and it's not a lot of out of the game table talk or, you know, rules clarification, any of that kind of stuff. And I think it really helps keep listeners in the moment.
We've talked about some of that and adding in some of that rules conversations. I've always had two thoughts. There are some podcasts I've listened to where I really like the rules as they explain why they make decisions and how they make decisions. And then there are some where I don't. And the ones I don't, it's because usually they, right in the middle of a scene, they break the scene to explain why they did something. And I'm like, you could have waited till afterwards, or you could have done it in a different way. So I don't like really getting into the rules, because I'd rather have the scene go smooth. And that's my theory, and that's kind of why everybody else agrees, and that's why we've edited it the way we do.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say we. When I say we, I really mean Kendall. When Kendall edits it down, he takes a lot of that stuff out. I don't know how many people would rather that we leave it in.
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to do, right? I mean, if you're trying to use it as a teaching tool, that's one thing. If you're trying to showcase the system versus you're just trying to tell a good story and you happen to be using the system to do that, right?
I guess just as a suggestion along with that, I know you guys have, not too recently, but you started using sound effects and stuff like that. I think that really helps tell the story and capture a moment. I'd like to see more of that.
Kendall, did you hear that? I 100% support this idea.
Especially since you're not the one involved in the process of that.
Yeah.
I love the sound effect because I think it adds more of that radio drama feel that we're trying to capture. And I think it adds a little more to the atmosphere. I don't want to get quite as far with the sound effects as like a book on tape, which I listen to a bunch of them. I have a job doing medical billing where I get to listen to whatever I want to in my headset all day long. So I listen to a lot of podcasts, books on tape. Books on tape, I think, would go a little too far because a lot of them add in a ton of sound effects.
Yeah.
And oh, you're on a ship. Well, I get to listen to a half hour of conversation with the
waves.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly. And I'm like, enough. Like, you could have just started with it and I'd be happy. So we've talked about that. You know, we just trust Kendall to make the right decisions. And I can't think of a time that he's made a decision where I'm like, ooh, that was not good. I think every decision he's made for sound effects I've enjoyed. And I think it adds to the effect and doesn't take away from anything. I would love if he does keep him in there.
Well, this is where you're going to plug, hey, give us more money on Patreon so that we can afford to get somebody else to do that, right?
Let us hire an editor.
I would love to be able to pay an editor, but I have no idea. I wouldn't even have a clue how much that would cost. I'm assuming quite a bit per hour.
The other thing I really like, I think is really cool that you guys have done that I haven't really heard anyone else do, are the little cuts at the beginning of the episode. Each character has their little signature line that they tell. More often than not, I'm cracking up when I hear those at the beginning.
Me too.
Yeah, for sure.
That was Kendall's idea. He threw that in one episode and basically said, what'd you guys think? And I was like, why aren't we doing that before?
Right.
Like,
why isn't everybody doing that? That is just brilliant.
Yeah. It was one of those moments where I was like, wow, the writing's on the wall and we just couldn't read it. Why did we not do that to begin with? We've always tried to look at what other shows are doing and do something a little different. You know, we don't want to be a copy of another show. And then that's kind of how we developed our style a little bit. And that's why our storyline is the way it is. Not why. It's part of the reason why our storyline is the way it is. The biggest reason is that's just our game style. You know, we're role players that just sit down and tell the story we want to tell. And I listen to what the guys say and build a story based on that and throw in some stuff I like. You know, I take some stuff off of what I can find on the internet. You know, lucky for me, Rusan just happened to be a planet one day I picked because they wanted to go somewhere. I'll throw this guy in there. And then I started reading about Rusan. I'm like, wow, a lot happened in Star Wars on this planet, which allowed me to tie a lot of that stuff in later. So I got lucky there. Tula, I researched it. There's not much that happens later in there. Other than Master Kukrook. He's one of the only Jedi that survived Order 66.
Well, speaking of that, like, how much research did you end up having to do once you got started with the podcast versus like before?
One of my big concerns when we started it was I wanted everybody that listens to it to enjoy it. I don't want somebody going, that's not how it worked in the books. That's not how this happened.
Right.
So before we jump into a planet or a character, I go online and I research it. And I don't look at just Wikipedia. I'll look at a couple other websites and go, okay, what do people think about this and that? You know, Tula, I looked that one up and I was like, okay, there's not much here. Kind of like Hoth, only that's where the Whippets are from, and there's some hot springs. So kind of an open canvas. I can do whatever I want there. And that's where I was like, well, I'm going to throw Potentium Temple up there. You know, the Potentium's another good example of that. I've always loved the idea of Force users that don't view the Force as light or dark. That it's a living thing that we get to do what we want with it. And that's real similar to what the Potentium Force users are. And I found that online. I modified it a little bit. I didn't want to just present it as, ooh, here, look, here's a gray Jedi that does whatever they want. Like, I wanted to justify, why do they feel this way? Well, if I can say it's my actions that make something good or evil versus just the Force made me do this, then that made a little more sense to me. So I do a lot of research. I get real hesitant to bring named NPCs in just because I don't want to portray them wrong. You know, Count Dooku, that scene. You know, when Tazi fired at Dooku, what you guys didn't hear was me go, how is Dooku going to react to this?
Yeah.
And the players went, what? I go, I'm not sure if he would just slaughter all you guys and just walk on or what. I go, okay, we need to pause. I go, Dooku has a bigger plan for you guys. Like, there's a bigger arc that's in his mind of what he's going to do with you guys and how he's going to manipulate you guys to help him better his cause. So I don't think he necessarily wants to murder you, because that longer plan is still in his mind, but yet you just shot him. There's got to be a consequence. And we talked about that. Like, what is your consequence? We talked about maybe Dooku maims Tazi. Maybe he's got a permanent limp, or he's got a bum arm or something like that. And, you know, when we started recording again, that's when I had him crush, you know, his favorite gun and kind of throw everybody out. I was like, he has shown his dominance. He has pushed you out. Now he's going to go back to his original plan, because his original plan was to find his next apprentice. Carell was supposed to be his next apprentice. Well, that didn't work out. Now he wants a different apprentice. It just so happened that the whole recording with Feet and everything and rescuing Janna's child worked out. Well, now I can use that as kind of a way of tying that back together. So he wanted to recruit her as his new apprentice.
Did you ever consider just killing Tazi, or like literally a TPK? Like, hey, I think Dooku might just kill you guys. How do you feel about that?
That was brought up.
Yeah.
Like, well, that'd be a short podcast. I guess we'd be starting new characters. But that kind of goes back to me as the game master and the yes and kind of theory.
Right.
Yes, and you're going to have some consequences, but what would they be? In my mind, Dooku is a master manipulator.
Yeah.
He is going to manipulate everybody, and he wants to make everybody his subject. So he saw a way of using them to his advantage still, which is where I then later came up with the idea of using the video. Oh, look, the Republic's people tried to kill me. Here's video of the cave, you know, collapsing on me. And it allowed Dooku to look, you know, sympathetic and throw the Krautsvang under the bus and throw the Republic under the bus and gain some sympathy for the separatist movement. That all came up after Mike said, I shoot Tazi. I was like, or not shoot Tazi. That'd be awkward. I shoot Tazi. All right, Mike, roll a new character. You just killed yourself. But after Mike said, I want to shoot Dooku, which, yeah, that was a moment where I hadn't, like, I blanked as a GM. Like, I don't know what to do. I almost just rolled a die to see what would happen.
All right. Well, I think that's everything on my list of questions. What about you, Jacob?
I always like to ask people, like, what gaming moment stands out to you? Because I have one very specific for me that I always go back to, where I kind of got awakened into gaming, and it just, it's a hallmark moment for me, and I always like hearing other people's.
For me, like, thing that locked me into role-playing, I started role-playing 14, so 20 some years ago, 27 years ago. I'll be honest, I'm 41. I'll be 42 here shortly. The first game session we ever played, a friend of mine, he was a couple years older than me. His brother-in-law had just moved back into our hometown, and he said, hey, let's play D&D. And I had no idea what it was. I was like, what is it? And he's like, my friend Kurt was like, I don't know, we play characters and have swords and kill things. And I was like, all right, I love these choose your own adventure books. So let's try it. And one of the other players that was there was a kid that he and I had this strange rivalry in school. I never understood why, but he always had to one-up me. So every class, you know, I managed to get into the AP math class. He had to make sure he was there. And he always had to sit near me and make sure he was louder than me. He and I just had this weird relationship. Well, he showed up and he was the expert. I have been playing this game for years. Looking back, I'm like, we were 14. How long could you have been playing this for? Like, you could have been playing it for thousands of years. I mean, we went through the game and I was trying to learn the game. And he did some things that even to this day, I still don't understand. And at the end of the game master, he, myself and him and my other friend Kurt were talking. And James, the game master, said to Kurt, who do you think was the best player at the table tonight? And Kurt was like, well, I don't know. And James turned right around and looked at me and said, there's your best player. And he pointed right at me and I was like, wait, what did I do? I played a wizard who casted one spell in the final battle and then did nothing. He's like, no. You were throwing oil on him, trying to light him on fire. You threw a rope to try to lasso the sword out of the hobgoblin's arm. I'm like, yeah, but I failed at all that stuff. Like, I felt like I was more of a hindrance. And he goes, no, it was your creativity and how you thought outside of your character sheet that makes you a good player. And that has always stuck with me because just the way he said that, it always made me go, so this character sheet is just some numbers. It's what I do with it that makes sense. And I gamed with James and Kurt for a couple more years, and then he was in the Navy and got shipped out again. And then I had to find other game masters, but that was the moment that really, I think, will stick with me for a long time. And that was the moment that hooked me on role playing. And that's why every time I sit down at the table, I'm always like, haha, how can I do something that nobody here is expecting? Like, what's the thing I can do that's outside the box to kind of throw the scene in a different direction? I don't mean that like in a malicious, like I'm going to throw the GM off.
Well, no, but I mean, it goes to exactly what you're saying. You build a wizard or a rogue or whatever that you don't have to pinhole them into that.
You know, in my little 14-year-old brain, I looked at this character who the game master has described to me as this, you know, he's got an 18 intelligence. Like, this is a super genius, you know, Albert Einstein and beyond. I'm like, first, my thought was, why does he only learn one spell then? Like, that doesn't seem all that smart. But he's cast his spell. He's going to do something else to help. He's not going to just sit back and just watch. He's going to try other things. He's a smart character. Now I look back and go, man, how would you play an 18 intelligence when I don't have an 18 intelligence? That's a hard one for me to grasp. But that's what role-playing is, though. That's why we play games. Yeah. To play characters that do things
that,
we can't
do. That aren't like us, yeah.
Yeah. Nobody has ever written a role-playing game. I'm like, all right, Jacob, you're going to work today. Roll to see how well you do paperwork.
Yeah, right. Yes.
All right, you survived today. Roll to see if you get a raise. Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't, because you got into a fight with your coworker, Richard.
What about in the Redemption podcast? What's your favorite moment?
And there's a lot that stick out. My favorite moment, and I don't know how many people have caught on to what was actually done, is when A1 looked at Tazi during Carell's whole almost trial and said to Tazi, yes, I will show the sheriff and the Jedi exactly what's in my memory banks. Because nobody at the table caught on to what A1 meant. And that was one of those moments where I was like, I've pulled one over on three players. And about the fifth time I said it, I heard Kendall go, oh my God, I got it. And I was like, what? He goes, no, I got it. A few minutes later, I saw the other two players. It clicked with what that meant. Other episodes, KO talking to Tazi about A1's feelings. That was another moment where, as a game master, I wanted to throw something at these three players to make them think. You know, these three players are like, we're against slavery and slavery is wrong. Hey, droid, go get your ass in the back and get to work. I was like, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm going to throw this at you and see how you guys react. You don't like slaves, but you're willing to kick a droid around. And then the player's like, oh, you're right. So then all of a sudden they're like, you're right. That is kind of slavery. So then they're like, yeah, you're free. That's not how this was supposed to work. You're supposed to look at me and be like, you're a machine. Just be quiet and go in the back or we wipe your memory. You know, there's a lot of scenes that really stick out in my head. To me, you know, Mike playing Tazi, he got some of my favorite moments. It's harder for you guys to kind of see him, but I get to see Mike at the table. When he gets into like a really kind of in-depth moments where he's struggled with, you know, his dad and things that have happened in the past. Mike as a player, you can see him actually experiencing those feelings. And there's a few times where I got done and wanted to go over and be like, do you need a hug? Right. Like, I swear you're almost going to cry because, like, you're so torn with what you want to do. There was a scene where Carell had come up and was consoling Tazi and put her hand on his shoulder, and he puts his hand on her hand. And just the look on Mike's face as he put his own hand on his shoulder, at the table, you could just feel that. It was a really intense moment. I almost want to use the term intimate, but not like we were getting naked kind of intimate, but... You know, it was one of those moments where as a player and as a game master, I won't forget because of how intense that moment got.
And I remember that moment. I think that was after Tazi shot Dooku. I would have to say that whole arc stands out for me, not just because Tazi shot Dooku, which was awesome by itself. But I mean, like, I felt like I could feel his frustration in that. You could feel Tazi just getting so frustrated with his ship being used for purposes that he didn't want them. And he was just getting manipulated and he was just fed up with it. And he's like, I don't know who you are, but screw you. I'm done getting used. And then all the after effects with Carell consoling him and he pulled out his flask that his father had and looked at that, and that all really kind of hit me, and I was like, I can feel that right there.
Yeah, that came through for sure.
Like I said, at the table it was real intense. Mike brought a lot of that out as he was role-playing through that scene. You know, when I sat down and wanted to do the Clone Wars, I told everybody, hey, look, you guys want to do this redemption arc, but I'm throwing you in right before the Clone Wars. So I'm also going to pull you guys in different directions. Because to me, this is the point in the Star Wars story where everybody's getting pulled in one direction or the other. Mm-hmm. You're either a separatist or you're with the Republic, and no matter how big or little your ship is, they want to pull you in one direction or the other. Just so happened they got pulled in with a major figure with T'Sar and Rafe, which that all happened in the episode that never aired because they were actually part of the original Wookiees and slaves that were on the ship when they took it over.
You mean your guys' first play session?
Yeah, very, very first play session, the audio didn't work. We tried to do the old idea of let's throw a Yeti microphone in the middle of the table and let's all just talk really loud. Well, we missed one key factor. The GM likes to use a GM screen and that blocked the majority of my voice. So it's hard to hear me. There's a lot of echoes. There's a lot of hollow sound. And we just didn't like the audio. So we scrapped it and started over with the Jedi interviewing them. That was that was 100% improvised. We sat down and went, how do we recap what happened, but do it in a way that fits the story? And I think it was Mike who came up with the idea of the Jedi could interview each person one after the other. And I said, all right, cool. If we're going to do that, the Jedi is going to try to catch you guys lying. So he's going to repeat a lot of the same questions and see if your stories match. And that's how we kind of started the actual show, was let's kick it off with that. Mm. And that worked out well because it gave everybody a good feeling for the characters and who they are and what they are, and kind of helped us kick off the story. I wish the first episode would not have, or the first recording session would not have gotten screwed up like that, and we'd been smarter with how we record. We were four geeks that were just excited to get together and play, and we were trying to find the cheapest way of doing it.
Well, I think that was a great alternative as opposed to just trying to go back and remember what you said and try and re-record it. But I guess going along with that, have you ever thought about trying to do something else with that first episode, redoing it and hitting the main points or anything like that?
We've talked about that several times. One of the things that is really nice with us and kind of what keeps us really playing this storyline is the fact that we can grow the story, and when we sit down at the table, all four of us aren't sure what's going to happen. If we know what's going to happen, we're afraid that it'll come off insincere and it'll come off sounding very fake. And, you know, Tazi walks into the bar and shoots Cantor.
Yeah.
Yay. We've also looked at it like, well, what happens if Tazi then goes into that scene and rolls the dice in blank? Uh-oh, he didn't shoot Cantor, but now Cantor gets to shoot back. Oh, well, that's not going to work because now you failed, but yet you actually succeeded. So we've talked about it, but there's just so many variables and just the feel of our show. We don't want to go back and redo it. We don't want to come across insincere and forced.
You just pull a Star Trek into an alternate universe.
Everybody puts on little goatees.
Closest we came to it was I pitched the idea of doing it like a dream sequence where somehow through the Force they all have a dream sequence and they all describe what their characters went through to begin with. I think that's about the closest we came, but Even then, I don't know if somebody wants to listen to KO for an hour describe what he visualized and what he saw. And now that it's over a year since we've done that one, I don't think we even remember exactly how it went. All I remember from that one is, well, one of the big moments was they tried to bluff Kratosk, the head of the Bounty Hunters Guild, and Tazi succeeded at bluffing him, but rolled a despair. And I said, oh, Kratosk believes you, but he also looks back and goes, is that R3A1? That was a droid that used to be on the Kralitz Fang, which just happens to be the same type of ship you have. And A1 basically was going, yep, this is me. Hi. You already knew it was me. And that's actually the moment I decided Kratosk had put a hard drive / whatever. I'm not a computer guy. The spyware.
Restrictor bolt or whatever that is. Yeah.
I would call it the spyware that was inside of A1. That's the only negative thing I've heard really people say. It wasn't an extra hard drive in A1. Like, somebody sent me an email describing what it would be, and I'm like, I'm not a computer guy, and I really don't know droids, so extra parts that allowed Kratosk to tap into him. Call it whatever you want.
Why don't you know the inner workings of droids? Come on.
I don't even know the inner workings of this computer in front of me.
That was one thing that always bothered me about the restraining bolts is it's like, okay, you have this little thing that can just magically make a droid do whatever you want, and it works for all droids.
Right.
And you just plunk it on there, and as soon as you pull it off, you're done. Okay.
Skywalker used a pair of pliers and a screwdriver and popped the thing off. Why didn't the droid just pop it off himself? Yeah. I've thought about that too. It's Star Wars. The joke I have with my son is, it's Star Wars. Some logic just gets kicked out the window.
Shoot a door to close it and shoot a door to open it.
Yeah. Hey, let's lock the door. So I shoot the only way to open it. How are you going to open it now? Oh, we'll just shoot the door. Yeah. Hold on. Time out. How does that slowly make the door move up?
It's okay. It's Star Wars. Yeah. That pretty much ran. I thought I was not going to have enough questions, but I think we did pretty good.
Oh, you guys did awesome.
Yeah.
I have some for you.
Oh, boy. I wasn't ready for this.
That's all right. Welcome to my world. Here's my moment to shoot Dooku, so to speak. What are some of the things you guys would like to see down the road?
Well, one thing that I always... I know it's always hard for role-playing gaming groups, especially people that are friends and been friends for a long time. It's hard to show vulnerabilities like this, but I'd like to see some romance arcs. I don't know. I know you talked there was, you know, A1 was kind of convinced that KO and Corel had some kind of unrequited love there, but I'd like to see some, you know, obviously not with them, but just something along with that. I know we're doing a 7C campaign in our group, and a lot of that is romance involved, and it's been a challenge for us because none of us have ever really done it before. But it's fun, and I think it's an integral part to any interesting story.
Yeah, we've talked about that. It's kind of funny to bring that up in a way. When A1 first locked on the idea of getting KO and Corel together, I actually had a conversation with Kendall. I said, okay, out of game, you tell me how you feel about this. I'm not going to say it's going to change what A1's going to do, because he's still going to try to get you guys together. But I just want to know long-term how that's going to play out. And one of the big things that kind of comes up in the game is you've got three guys here. One guy is playing female. How comfortable are two guys role-playing a romance?
Absolutely, yeah.
I honestly believe Nate and Kendall are good enough role-players that they could do it. How would that come out at the end?
Right.
Part of my fear is that whole back to the original concept of, you know, we're 16 years old. We're in my friend's basement. I'm going to go to the bar and get laid.
Right.
Kind of games. Yeah. Like, I don't want the game to turn into that. So we talked a lot about it. Part of Kendall's feelings, and I'm hoping I'm getting this explanation right, if Corel was not so focused on trying to prove herself and trying to find her path, she might be, but she's not thinking romantic.
Sure.
She's almost, these people are a means to an end to begin with, and now she's starting to kind of see the crew a little bit more than just a means to an end. That is actually something we've talked a lot about. One of my kind of questions I have for myself is, Corel's obviously not interested in romance. Tazi, maybe? I'm not sure how I would tie that in. KO, maybe?
I know there was a little bit there with him and...
Jenny.
I was thinking Darla, but yes.
Yes.
That was a good one. When I announced Jenny had passed, the look on their faces was like, what? I mean, that is something we've looked at, and it's something that I'm trying to piece together how to fit that in. Because Star Wars did have that in it. It had Leia and Han Solo. Their weird tension that they had for a long time. And I think that's part of the Star Wars universe. And I'd like to tie that in. I'd like to, you know, keep that feel in. I just, as a game master, have to figure out how to tie that in. So it's on my list.
Yeah.
It's on my list. Anything else you guys would maybe want to see thrown in?
I know you mentioned some space battles and stuff. You've got on the ship, you've got the ion cannon and the blasters or whatever. And I know there's been a little bit with like the vulture droid. I guess the hard part about that is you've got two characters doing gunnery, one pilot, and then one character sort of sitting there twiddling their thumbs being the comic relief, I guess.
I've been reading more of the starship combat stuff. There is a lot more actions that a co-pilot can take. So you'd have KO down there shooting the main gun, either Corel or A1 in the back shooting the ion cannon. Hopefully Corel, because she's better at it than A1. And A1's much better as a co-pilot. But there are things like jamming the enemy sensors, scanning the enemy, spoofing missiles, moving the shields around, that kind of stuff. Mm. I'm working on familiarizing myself with those rules and getting myself comfortable with it. And we are definitely going to put more ship combats in there. One thing, looking through the rules, I don't want to get into like capital ship combat, because I don't want to be rolling, well, this ship has 80 guns. All right. Start rolling for each of these. But smaller ship combat, we're definitely going to start working more into it. We're going to work a little more of that. And part of it is, you know, Tazi's a pilot. His character is built around that. As a player, Mike hasn't had a lot to do with piloting stuff. And as a game master, I look at that as I should be building the story to play around the character's strengths. And I've talked with Mike about it, and he understands my thoughts on ship combat. And he and I have talked a lot about that. And he understands that, you know, my whole 3D trying to think about it doesn't necessarily work out. So we're going to work on adding that in. He's going to keep, you know, obviously the piloting stuff in his character. When we advanced him, he didn't advance a lot of that stuff because we haven't done a lot, which I kind of felt like as a game master, I don't want to say I let Mike down, but kind of, okay, here's a good lesson learned for me. I should have looked at his character a little more, and I should have worked more of that into it. I should have gotten over my hurdle with that and done it. We're definitely going to do that. I would like to do a little more with the Crowlet's Fang as a whole. You know?
Well, that was going to be my next point I brought up. One of my favorite things about a role-playing group is bringing in either the vehicle or the base or whatever and kind of treating it like one of the characters of the group. And I know you guys have done quite a bit of that with the Crowlet's Fang, which is awesome. But I always like seeing more of it. I like seeing the home base or the ship grow and evolve with the characters throughout a story arc.
We actually talked about using Tula as their home base.
Yeah, I got excited when you guys talked about that.
Here's the flaw that we had. It's in Separatist space. If you look at the map, not far from the Separatist main planet. So I was like, oops.
Hide right under their nose.
That was kind of the thought I had, but just the way the story worked out, it didn't take us in that direction.
Yeah, but even the Crowlet's Fang, like, I'd like to see more. Whenever a group gets a, you know, a vehicle or something, I always want to make it our own, upgrade it and put cool things on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things with A1 is, since he's not allowed to fix things on the ship, but he's allowed to make improvements as an inventor. That's one thing I've toyed around with of, how do I twist that? Because that's something A1 would do. He's a kid. He's kind of a rules lawyer. He's going to go, well, I can't fix this gun, but I can make it bigger.
Or I can build a medical bay for KO. That was a really cool part. Yeah. He had this little secret project that he was building.
That actually spawned from the group going, we should make one of the cargo bays a medical bay. So A1 latched onto it. But what's funny is I didn't realize as a game master, they were actually talking about one of the detachable cargo bays. They were actually talking about being able to drop medical bay off, make money doing it. So I built it on the ship and afterwards went, oh, well, I just had A1 build it in a totally wrong spot. So we're not going to retcon that. We're going to keep it because A1 just didn't interpret it the right way. And I got to torture KO by having a stripper on his table. And Tazi had to smell coconut oil.
There's some romance too, I guess. Yeah.
That was great.
I tried. I don't think Tazi or KO have a love for coconut oil or strippers.
Now you know.
Maybe they do. I don't know.
Ah, so we are influencing the game right now.
Yeah. Let's just type it on my phone real quick.
So I think one thing, Tula obviously doesn't have a lot there. I'd be interested to see sort of other planets their other systems or whatever you want to call them. You know, maybe ones that, you know, not necessarily the obvious ones, but ones that have sort of been mentioned offhand. So again, like you said, have that kind of blank canvas to throw things together and, you know, give yourself options to maybe have a base somewhere in Republic space. Or I don't know, I'd be interested to see what the guys come up with. If, you know, you say, hey, here's a planet and here's, you know, the two facts that are mentioned about it on the internet, and you guys come up with the rest.
I love and hate Wikipedia all at the same time, because it'll say reference from this one game because this one character went there for one thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, really? Wow.
Well, yeah. What's really cool is in Kendall's living room, he has the whole map of the entire galaxy up on his wall.
Yeah.
So you can just go kind of close your eyes and point to something and be like, hey, what's there?
And that's what I did with Rusan.
Yeah.
I just picked one that was in between where they were and where they wanted to go and went, all right, you're going to Rusan. And then I kind of researched it after the fact. One of the things I'm trying to do when I kind of run the game and kind of guide the game, I don't want loose ends. So one of my hurdles is whatever planet we go to, whatever happens there, I want it to end. Like, there's only one loose end in the game that we haven't tied up, and that's where his master Rays.
Mm-hmm.
He disappeared. We don't know where he is, and that's the only loose end I have. I like tying up the loose ends. I don't want to leave a red herring there. I like tying things up. I read a really nice article on, I think it's called Chekhov's Gun, and that's a concept in a story where if you describe something, it has to come up in the story.
Yeah, it's if you show the gun on the mantle in Act 1, it's right there. Everybody's going to be looking at it going, okay, well, when is that going to be used? Then if you don't use it, people go, well, they don't know why, but they are unsatisfied. Or like, you know, when you're on stage and you drop a prop or something and it just sits there on the floor while you go through two scenes, people, they can't get their mind off of that thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing I try as a game master very hard not to do. So if I mention something specific, we need to tie it up, which I know sometimes makes the players go, this again? Like when I brought Tassar back, Kendall was kind of, really? I thought we tied that up. I'm like, I don't feel like we have. I feel like Rafe and Tassar is still out there and we need to tie it up. I brought them back and not changed Rafe, but revealed more about Rafe than I was originally intending to. Originally, Rafe was supposed to be this master manipulator who later was going to be revealed, hopefully in gameplay a couple years down the road. He was going to come up in the Clone Wars as a big figure. But just the way the game went, it made sense to tie it back in where we did. You know, having him revealed as this guy who's learned from, you know, this Master Khan, as he calls himself, and then giving Carell the option of join me or die, basically, in that scene. I mean, I don't think he exactly used those words, but that was basically what he was saying.
The message got across.
Yeah. You know, that was a big moment for Carell's character, because that really gives Kendall the option of what direction do I go?
Mm-hmm.
Do I go dark? Do I go light? Do I say no more with the Jedi? I'm done. Like, what direction are you going? This is the moment that you as a player need to decide where's your character going. And that was tough to bring that back for me, because I kind of wanted this NPC to be there for a while, but it made sense in the game to tie it up. That's my big goal for myself, is to never have something out there that's not resolved. I'm still trying to figure out how to resolve the Master Rays thing, because originally his disappearance, I was thinking they might go investigate it, but they chose not. So now I have to come up with, well, what happened to him?
I don't know. That could be a plot for another con game or something, right? Have another group find him and bring him in or something. I don't know. A Catacon 2017, just saying.
Any other questions you guys have about the show, or any other thoughts about where you'd like to see it go?
No, I mean, you guys are you're pretty much awesome. The one pod of two podcasts that I listen to regularly. Every time a new episode is out, I will catch it. So I mean, no, you guys are doing good.
Awesome. I love to hear that. You know, I appreciate you guys coming on. You know, love the input. I love the questions. Thanks a lot for your guys' time.
Yeah. I'm available if you need another guest voice.
I'll work on it for sure.
Likewise. I can't promise that I'll be as awesome as Axel, but you know.
Dude, I was impressed with Axel. That kid did a great job.
Well, that wraps up our behind the screen interview. Thank you so much to Richard and Jacob. You guys were awesome. I had a ton of fun. Also, if anyone else has questions about the show or suggestions for the storyline, feel free to hit me up on Twitter. I am at Berlew_Chris. I would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Last but not least, I just want to say thank you to everyone who listens. We have had a great first two seasons, and we are looking forward to several more. Deep, deep. Hey, wait a minute. I did that this time.
Hey, interact with us on social media. You know you want to. We're at Facebook and Twitter at Redemption Pod. We have an Instagram account, Redemption Podcast, and a website, redemptionpodcast.com. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcaster of choice. These reviews really help people find the show. And if you like us, please consider donating to our Patreon. We're never going to charge for the game. We do this because we enjoy it, and we enjoy telling a great story. But if you want to kind of donate to help us out, I mean, hey, it got Nate a new microphone. You can find us at patreon.com/redemption.